You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Good morning if you're just after joining us. It was another interesting hour to get things underway for today. We appreciate your calls and comments coming into the show as well. This listener says, it's very expensive and there's a lot of red tape to put a taxi on the road in rural areas after COVID, between older people not leaving their homes to young people moving abroad and going to college. Business, pubs, cafes closing, customers dropping off dramatically. On top of that, the local links came into areas which did not help. Lots of rural taxi drivers saying the same thing. And very interested, of course, to speak to a member of the taxi driving community. Another caller says, you cannot put a taxi on the road unless it's wheelchair accessible. And the back roads in Donegal, where most people live, are dreadful for ordinary cars, never mind WAV vehicles. Just a couple of announcements here. Thanks so much for your recent media coverage highlighting the crisis facing our playgroup due to defective blocks. This is the RCP. We hope to keep our struggle to avail of funding in the spotlight, and to this end have arranged a unique event at the playgroup this Sunday, the 21st of April at 1 p.m. All past pupils and their families dating back to 1982 are invited to have a large group picture taken by drone. Families will be invited to see hundreds of past photos and view the premises. At 3 p.m, a charity football tournament has been organised by Raphoe Town Football Club at Drumanuni, Raphoe, to raise funds for the playgroup. So this is the Raphoe Community Playgroup. So if you are have attended or have any involvement since 1982, you can get along on Sunday the 21st at 1 p.m. and be part of a huge photograph, which will actually really, in a very visual way, highlight the importance of these facilities. Hi, could you please announce that St. Ninian's Hall Convoy are having a jumble and variety sale on Saturday? It's from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Refreshments will be served. Tables supplied, €15. Everyone welcome. Hi, Greg. Could you give a big shout out to all at Fintown Harps, who are running a massive country concert this Saturday night in Fintown Hall? Loads of top artists, all backed by the Cufflinks Band. Okay, sounds fantastic. Lots going on this weekend. Bit of a buzz. Thank you for having us on your programme last week, Greg. We sold out almost all of the tickets overnight. Would it be possible to mention that additional seats have been added to cope with the demand at some stage this week? Of course, this is the Below the Belt screening. It was a documentary that has been made about endometriosis. And there is that's airing on Monday, the 29th of April from 9:30. 19:30, I beg your pardon, at Century, that's 7:30, at Century Cinemas, Letterkenny. So we have a link there. We can tell you about that if you give us a ring. If you thought you'd missed out on tickets, more have been made available. We spoke to young students from Skullmora Bonkrana, and they had this fantastic idea. It's part of a programme that they're putting together where they're sending leaflets out to schools across the region, talking about alcohol and how it can affect you and what have you. But they also produced, and hope the launch went really well for them, they've also produced beer mats, which you can have a QR code on them, and you can scan the QR code and it gives you a list of local taxis, and this was local to their area. And it is a good idea, but it kind of ties in with what we've been talking about today to some extent as well. And this doesn't take away from the brilliance of the idea. But this texter says, brilliant idea that the Bonkrana Secondary School students had. Pity the regulator seems to be making it almost impossible to get a taxi or Hackney licence. So the two issues kind of merge at some point there in the Zen diagram. A caller says, I got 3 penalty points about 3/4 of a year ago, but I paid for them. I was told that if they were paid, they'd be taken off. My insurance company informed me that the RSA never took them off. Why was this? I've never heard of being able to pay off penalty points. I won't mention the insurance company involved here just until such time as we clarify that. But have you ever heard of this before? Maybe you're paying the insurance company to allow for them, if that's how you would describe it. The RSA, I've never heard of penalty points that you could pay to take them off. So unless you can maybe text in with a little bit more detail, that might help us pursue that for you. Are you allowed to burn turf in Donegal? It isn't clear whether or not you can. Well, you can, can't you? I don't think the, or maybe the smoky fuel ban, I don't know. I don't live in Letterkenny. Can you burn turf? Is that smoky fuel? Can you burn turf in Letterkenny? Caroline, can you burn turf in Letterkenny as part of this fuel ban? You can't burn turf in Letterkenny, no? What? Smokeless turf, Caroline? Where are you going to get smokeless turf now, dear? Right, okay, it is small. not in the areas where you have to burn smokeless fuel, but elsewhere, yeah, you can, because people do, and you can still cut it as well. Greg, I had a near-death experience on a back road 2 weeks ago. I rang the RSA and was told that they only deal with vehicles and that the road markings is not their problem. Okay, so you were talking about, I get you, so you had a near-death experience on a back road. You rang up the RSA to talk about linings and what have you. They said, that's not our issue, we only deal with cars. All right, okay, that's not fantastic. I think they might need to widen the remit if that's the case. Good morning to Annie, Kathy, Dolores, Glenda, Audrey, Beth, Rosemary, all watching the show, amongst the hundreds watching the show across our various social medias. Just to remind you before we take a break, you can watch the show, most of the guests, on your big screen TV if you're at home, or your Fire Stick, YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. Type us in, like and subscribe, please. It's very much appreciated. Just to remind you of our contact details, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Two guests in studio with us now, Dr. Martin Gormley, Director of Schools with Donegal ETB. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
And we also have Eamon Ryan, Ethos Coordinator with Donegal ETB. Thanks for joining us, Eamon.
Hello, Greg.
It's really good to have you on the show. Shall we just outline the role of the Donegal ETB, I wonder, Martin?
Well, the Donegal ETB has a wide role within the county. For example, we would have 15 post-primary schools which directly come under our management. We'd also have a huge further education and training service. We also have a Garten Outdoor Education Centre. We have a music education partnership. We're also involved in the youth services. We're also involved in drugs and alcohol training and education. So it's a very, very wide role and remit that we would have right across the county. But it's primarily in further education and training and education with post-primary students.
Now, you've been with the ETB, Donegal ETB, since the late 80s.
Yeah, I joined Donegal ETB actually in 1987. I was a teacher at the time down in what was Milford Vocational School, now called Mulroy College.
Yeah, indeed. And there's 15 ETB schools at the moment in the county. Has that always been the case?
Well, we've had a number of developments. There's 27 post-primary schools in the county. Mm-hmm. 15 of them are come under the direct remit of the ETB, formerly the VEC. We've had a number that we've added over the years. For example, Garmscald Victermida on Ardmore Island. Also have our school in Torrey. Also Colostra Kinalone. Mayen College Bundoran. They were all recent ones that would have came into our management since 1987, since I joined. And when I joined Donegal ETB, we would have had 11 schools. We now 14 or 15 rather.
Yeah, and what is the sort of do schools seek to join the ETB, or other schools just choose to be under different sort of management structures? What, how does that work? I know it's a really simple question, but answer it to me like I'm five.
It's probably a legacy thing. There's a tradition there. There's a number of different types of management bodies that look after post-primary schools here in Ireland. There's the ETB, as we've mentioned there. There's then community and comprehensive schools, which would be also a number of those in the county. And of course then the joint management board would have four schools then, like St. Eunan's, Letterkenny, the convent in Letterkenny, Scullwarra in Boncrana, and St. Columba's there in Stranorlar. So that's sort of the kind of variety of management bodies that look after.
And what is the benefit of schools being sort of part of the Donegal ETB umbrella?
Well, there's great support for our schools. For example, say in our administrative office in Letterkenny, we would have a HR department, we have a buildings estates management, we have a finance department, we have a corporate service there, we have IT support. So all our 15 schools are able to sort of look for support there, get support. And there's also tremendous networking amongst our principals, our deputy principals, our teachers. And, we can form communities of practice very easily to support one another professionally. And that has worked tremendously well in terms of improving the quality of teaching and learning in the classroom.
Eamon Ryan, as I mentioned, is with us as well, Ethos Coordinator with Donegal ETB. So can you sort of define your role under that title?
Yeah, every school in the country is under a certain patronage. So the schools that are under the patronage of an ETB, they have a particular ethos. So right across the country, in each ETB, there is an ethos coordinator. And the job of the ethos coordinator is to support schools in looking at their ethos, looking at their policies and practice, and making sure that those policies and practice are aligned with the ETB ethos.
Yeah, and are these sort of, do they have to, is there a sort of a diktat from the Department of Education that your role is also to, as best as possible, ensure that you align with their directives, or how does that structure work?
That would happen anyway, and that would happen for all schools in the country, regardless of the patronage. So my role is particularly around that ethos piece. Another word for ethos is maybe the characteristic spirit of the school, and making sure that the schools are, that they're providing excellence in education. That's excellence in teaching, learning and assessment. That they're schools that are caring, respectful, equality-based, and there's a sense of community in the schools. Those are the core values that underline the ethos of an ETB school.
And how then is that, I suppose, how is that informed and how is that implemented?
Well, Martin mentioned just a moment ago about the whole concept of communities of practice. So what happens is I support the schools in Donegal, and there's one person in each school is the ethos lead person in that school. So I meet with those ethos leads on a regular basis, and we share good practice across our schools. But as well as that, I'm part of a wider community of practice of other ethos coordinators around the country. So I'm looking at what's happening in other ETBs, right from the southwest, right up to where we are, the northwest, Dublin and so on, and looking for good practice and sharing that good practice across all of the ETB schools.
And I presume then, you know, it's to ensure as best as possible that the teachers' experience, the students' experience is, maximised, that it's as best it can be. So in other words, you've got one school that's doing everything really, really well. The expectation would be that all students and teachers in the other schools could expect that same.
Absolutely. That's what we're looking for, is that consistency of approach across all of our schools. And we're aiming to have our schools to be the best schools possible. Every parent wants their child to go to a school that is a good school. So we want our schools to be as good as they possibly can be in teaching, in learning, in assessment.
And but you also don't want to remove their individuality
absolutely.
Either, do you? Because there's an ethos almost within an ethos. It could be language, it could be music, it could be
sport,
yeah. Whatever it might be.
Absolutely. That's a great point. You know, so while we want to raise standards across the board, we absolutely recognise the individuality of schools who serve their communities and meet the needs of their communities. And as you say, it could be that they have a particular strength in Irish language or in music or in sport or in music performance, that type of thing. And that's certainly to be encouraged. What schools will do is they'll express that through their mission and their vision statements, and then their policies will flow from that. But at the same time, we're looking for them to have that consistency of approach where all standards are raised.
Some listening, just such is the nature of the world we live in now, might see the word ethos and equate it to the word woke.
Mm. It's funny, that word ethos, I mean, the ETB sector struggled with that. If we go back to 1998, the Education Act, that's the legislation that underpins everything that happens in schools. And they used the word characteristic spirit, you know, and then the ETBs decided on the word ethos. Some, if you ask people what's meant by ethos, a lot of people might think, well, it has something to do with maybe religion. They make that kind of connection. The way I look at ethos is how we live together, how we work together, and how we relate to each other.
The way I would say, to be honest, it was a healthy school environment.
Absolutely.
You know,
and a safe school environment where, you know, children and staff feel safe physically, but where they also feel safe emotionally and they feel that their needs are being met. Those are important aspects of every school.
Okay, that's the sort of the school element as well. Of course, there is more strings to the ETB bow. You can put your headphones on there because we're going to talk to another guest here now who's joining us remotely, and that is Valerie Yagovchuk. Is that correct? I'm trying and learning all the time. Valerie, I really am. I think I've got Valerie right.
Valerie Yakovchuk. Yes,
okay. Right.
Good morning.
Thank you very much indeed. Right. Now, you recently came from Ukraine. What was your,
yes.
What did you bring a profession with you or an area of expertise from Ukraine, Valerie?
By profession, I am a doctor. I'm an anesthetist, and usually I administered anesthetic in surgery theaters. But in order to work as a doctor here in Ireland, I have to pass some exams. First of all, English exam, and then two more medical exams. It can take about maybe 2 years. That's why I'm learning English, and at that moment I didn't have any job, and I found this course, ETB course, and I always was interested in accountancy and math, and it was interesting for me. That's why I chose this course, and I'm happy with to have this course done now, and it was very useful for me.
Now, you, thanks to your training work as in administration with the government body, but we've lost you to the. Have we lost you from the world of medicine? We probably need also your anaesthetist expertise, Valerie.
Yes, I know, but. Ireland has such rules for doctors from non-EU countries. That's why I'm preparing for my exams now, and I'm happy to have this job at this stage. I'm very thankful for this opportunity for ETB.
Yeah, because, of course, you have to keep bread on the table, as they say. You're here with your family, your children are in school. Your youngest daughter actually attends an Irish language school.
Yes, that's right. I'm here with my family. My wife is working as well in the Co-op store now. And my son is studying in Rose Community School, secondary school. And my daughter is studying in a national school in Anagri. And I'm very proud of her because she speaks now English and Irish as well. I was very surprised, and we are very happy.
Yeah, well, our young ones are like sponges, aren't they? They soak up so much,
definitely.
So much information, and it's a great string for her bow later in her life as well. So, whilst thanks to this retraining, you are able to get employment in administration, still working towards practicing medicine, I presume, and I suppose as well through your work and engaging with other people, all the while English is improving.
Yes, it helps me a lot because I have to speak with customers and with my colleagues, and I'm very helpful for my colleagues as well because they are a great help for me. And I hope it helps me eventually to get my job in medicine.
Okay, well, listen, you're happy here anyway, and life is good.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent stuff. Thank you so very much indeed. And that is and talks to gentlemen, Dr. Martin Gormley and Eamon Ryan, who's with us. Martin, that talks to the benefits beyond what we've already been talking about of the Donegal ETB.
Yeah, I suppose like it is a typical example of a family that has come to Ireland, and Donegal ETB has been able to respond to their need. For example, there, you know, in terms of adult classes for parents, and that would be through what we call our ESOL program there. So we have an awful lot of new people who've come into the country, and I suppose we're charged with trying to deliver or the English language to them and trying to improve their proficiency in English. But it's great to hear Valerie there that has settled down in West Donegal, and his kids going to an Irish primary school and stuff like that there.
I think he's surprised at how well his daughter is taken to the Irish language.
It just shows you, do you see? And that's what's happening in our schools at the minute. We've, you know, a lot of new kids that have come into to our different schools, and what we have to do then is we're supporting them through what we call an EAL program, which is English as an additional language. So we're getting some resources to do that. And, you know, schools are much different places.
That is a challenge though, isn't it? And I don't mean this in any way negative at all, but we're in a unique situation where you get a lot of people coming into a school, right? And maybe there is a language barrier there that you want to accommodate those children and ensure that they reach their full potential. But at the same time, you don't want that to have any negative impact on the school experience of children up until then? Because the sort of, you know, two speeds of traffic going there, a balance I perhaps wouldn't like to try and strike myself.
Yeah, but our teachers in our schools are very skilled with our staff. There are SNAs and all the support staff we have there in terms of overcoming those types of challenges. We tend to have a very positive approach to it. So when a new kid comes to the school, if they're from Croatia or somewhere like that there, we would introduce them as this young boy speaks Croatian and a little bit of English. So we don't sort of maybe try to focus on the fact that, you know, there are challenges with the language. But once they get immersed in a school, and there's integration and you know, teachers and that put structures in the classroom themselves to try to include those kids there, you can see them improving in leaps and bounds.
Well, when you see what humans are capable of, this is surely a nut we can crack.
It is, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It can't be beyond us, can it?
And the other thing about schools is it's great to see diversity in them, because that's really a mirror of wider society then. And, you know, the world is so interconnected now. So if we can reflect that in our schools with young people at a very young age, that gives them great skills in terms of going forward into adult life.
Yeah, and so who can talk to the services of Donegal ETB from you or Eamon in terms of, you know, those listening today that are outside the school, they've left school for some time, maybe they're in a job, they'd like to try something else or pursue or scratch a niche that they've always had. What can the Donegal ETB assist in that regard?
Well, we have a further education and training service, and through that we have an adult learner guidance service. So that probably is the first point of call for them, to contact adult learner guidance service within Donegal ETB. And we have a number of professionals there who will be able to point them in the right direction then and just get them started. And sometimes it's little steps at the start, but a lot can be achieved.
Yeah, that's the further education and training. In terms of ethos, as ethos coordinator, Eamon, is it like, are we in a period of time now where we're trying to get everything right, if you know what I mean, that we're trying to be inclusive, but then there are lines that people don't want you to cross? Like, is there any challenges in your work to ensure that the school environment is the environment that is reflective of parents' wishes?
I mean, the important thing for a parent is that there's choice there, and choice of school insofar as possible. And that's one of the things that ETB is trying to do, is trying to be as inclusive as possible. But the bottom line for schools is they're trying to be as good as they can be. So they're trying to be meet the academic wishes of parents and students, but at the same time recognising that you'll only reach your academic potential if you're in a school where you feel you belong, where you're happy, where you feel cared for, and so on. So the two things are interlinked in terms of meeting parents' wishes and ambitions, and then the students and the happiness of the students in the school environment.
Yeah, and children feel safe as well, absolutely, of course. Martin, staffing. What's the staffing situation across the 15 Donegal ETB schools? Is that a challenge?
Well, it can be a challenge. It depends on particular subjects. We're probably not as acutely affected as, say, our schools in Dublin or in the commuter belt there. In Donegal ETB, by and large, we have most of our posts filled. Sometimes, you know, later in the year, things like a maternity leave can occur there, and we may have issues trying to fill posts at the times at short notice like that. But by and large, we don't experience the same difficulties around recruitment. In fact, we'll be advertising over the coming weeks now around teaching vacancies for the forthcoming year. So we would encourage any of our people out there who's interested in joining Donegal ETB as a teacher to watch out for those adverts.
All right, brilliant stuff. It's been really interesting. Anything else that we didn't touch on, either you, Martin, or Eamon, that might be interesting to our listeners?
I think what, you know, what you were saying there around schools, the big thing from talking to parents about schools is students need to be safe and they need to be happy. And if we can get those two things right, the learning comes then quite easy, and it's much easier. But if you don't get those things right there,
and I think too, also another thing that parents might say or might text in is they want to be heard as well, that they feel that the schools are, you know, dealing with any concerns that they might have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not alone have parents to be heard, but students have to be heard also.
Of course, yeah.
And I think that's something that, you know, schools have been working on this last while. They've been promoting student voice. And it's not just student voice to a student council. It's student voice in the actual classroom. For example, teachers now, when they're doing different texts and different subjects and that, they talk to students about, you know, giving them a choice, which would they prefer, maybe point out, you know, that what's involved in it. And there's little decisions made there, which are very effective and, you know, contribute and recognise students has been very, very important part of school communities.
And just Damon, on the sort of engagement with parents and guardians, does, I mean, obviously, presumably that falls under the remit of ethos as well, does it?
Absolutely. It falls under the issue of voice and agency and making sure that both students and parents and staff have their voice and have their voice heard and taken into account. One of the initiatives that many of our schools are involved in is school self-evaluation. And that's a process whereby the school actively seeks out the voice of the parent, of the student, of the staff before making changes to things like policies and practice. And it's making sure that that voice is at the heart of changes rather than one or two people making a decision. It's a very democratic process.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, one of the values or one of the important values of a good ETB school.
Yeah, and I suppose too, the challenge is in that in trying to get everything correct, it has to be done in a way though that can be navigated, can't it? Because if this was done wrong, it could just be layer and layer and layer of things with an aim to make things better, but so convoluted that it would be like walking through a maze to get to a resolution or to get to a point where a school might want to be in a particular area.
That's a brilliant point because, I mean, schools are full of human beings, you know, whether it's staff or students, and everything that's decided has to be easily implementable. And then when it is implemented and it happens, it needs to be assessed to see, well, is this doing what we hoped it would do? And if not, we need to be able to make changes. But there's no point, as you say, in layering policies upon policies upon policies if practices don't change and if practices are practices must be implementable.
And where would you gauge where we're at and where we need to be? I mean, nothing is complete, but in terms of your 15 schools, how satisfied, what would you give them? What grade would you give where we're at? I suppose we want to be at A+.
Well, it's
always a work in progress.
Our schools are very progressive,
yeah,
and they've taken on a lot of change, and teachers have taken on a lot of change in recent years in schools. And there's more down the line. For example, we're going to see the whole senior cycle redeveloping, the leave insert being redeveloped, and teachers are getting ready for that. The conversations have happened a number of years ago, and they're really now talking about how that's going to work in practice. And we're having those discussions with our principals, with our deputies. Our community of practices across the subjects are also talking about that there and how it's going to change school lives. School has changed so much. Like, I know myself and Eamon would have started, you know, back in 87, around that time there, 86, 87, around that time. And, you know, if you look now at how a school has changed, there's been, you know, so many different things that have happened in schools, and it's really for the good. And even if we look at our student population, you know, the fact that there's so much diversity there, you know, there's different cultures, there's different people eat different things, you know, they behave differently, they're interested in different sports, their music, art, all of those things are so important.
But at the same time, you want to recognise, we of course want to recognise what makes us different or what is culturally appropriate or whatever it might be, but also to the school environment you want to set it up to that there's full integration as well.
There's full integration and there's, you know, there's understanding, there's tolerance. And people can see different perspectives, and that's so important. If it's geography, if it's history, we had a very interesting debate around flags with our schools there, where, you know, we were talking about flags, and flags can be offensive sometimes to different students depending on where they're coming from. And, you know, we had a very good debate around that, and we were sort of concluded then that, you know, promoting different countries through language, through their cuisine that they have, through the, you know, their geography, their history, all of that there would make them very, very welcome.
Yeah, and it's such an important role, just to wrap it up. I mean, like, you know, we need to hear young voices more as well. And I'm on about, when I say young, I'm on about like 25 down. This is their country, do you know what I mean? Mm. With all due respect to all three of us, I think we've spent more time here in the past than we might into the future, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you often listen to debate and conversation about various different things, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be had, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily talk to or on behalf of the young people. You know, I suppose we've a responsibility to what country we're leaving them, but it is their country going forward.
Can I tell you about an initiative that happened just yesterday? It was in Finn Valley College in Stranorla, which is one of the ETB schools. And they hosted a debating competition between 8 local primary schools, fifth class students. So the students who were debating were typically about 10 or 11 years old. But the whole debate was organised by and run by the Finn Valley students. And then the Finn Valley students who were aged about 16, they sat with each of the teams, the younger teams, and prepared them for the debate. So they explained to them how to debate and, you know, what points they might make and how to research for the debate. And then when that debate was over, they went away and they prepared for the next debate. And that was a real example of, we were promoting the student voice of the 10-year-olds, but it was the 16-year-olds who were supporting them, where the adults, the older people, took a step back. Yep. And it's that type of model of involvement and making sure the student voice is at the heart of what we do.
What's clever about that too is whilst the 16-year-olds may think, and they are, assisting and helping the younger students, they themselves are...
Oh, they're
learning
developing too,
themselves.
Yeah, and leadership development.
I think sometimes that's the best learning, isn't it, when you don't really realise you're learning.
Everybody left the event a little bit taller than when they came into it.
Yeah. That's what it's all about, isn't it, education? Yeah.
All right, listen, it's been really interesting. Thanks to Valerie, who joined us a little earlier on, and also Dr. Martin Gormley, Director of Schools with the ETB, and also Eamon Ryan, Ethos Coordinator with the ETB. That was part of Your Voice, Your Community, brought to you by Commissioner Mann. We look at the work of the ETB is what we looked at the work of the ETB in education and training. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Brian Kelly is a defective block homeowner and he joins us on the programme now. Brian, thanks for your time.
Hi, Greg. How you doing?
When did the penny drop that yous were affected by defective materials?
As far back as 2016, long before, I suppose, a lot of these groups came online. There was talk, and we had some suspected cracks in the house.
All right, so...
We contacted an engineer, and he came out and looked, and he tried to convince us we didn't have an issue, that he had seen bad houses, and our house wasn't bad. So gave us a report on a visual inspection, charged us for that report, and 3 years later, we got the same engineer out in 2019, and he said, oh, maybe it's now time to do a bit of testing. So that was in August 2019.
And there was quite a hefty bill associated with that test in 2019.
Upwards of £6,500 for the testing for the DCB scheme. And it took from August 2019 until February 2021 to get the reports and engineering reports ready and for submission to the council for a stage one application, which happened in February 2021.
And then you got approval in 2022, you mentioned, for full demolition, is it?
The house was initially for, I believe, we got approval in demolition in December 2022. That was 71 weeks ago. As soon as we got approval, we realized that our house is a big house, it's almost 3,400 square feet. There was never going to be enough money to rebuild it in the cap which had been proposed at 420,000. So we were conscious that our kids were almost out of university, that let's build something that the grant will cover. And that's what we chose to do. So we applied for a smaller house. We reduced the size to 2,000 square feet.
Were you accepted?
That went through the planning. The first thing, we hit a hiccup where the housing department asked us for an archaeological dig on the site. It involved a lot of lobbying to get over that. As of today, I don't know if that's been accepted. We haven't had a grant award. We've been told we can have a demolition. We've been told the planning has been passed for a new house. But 18 weeks into our stage two application, which I suppose is 4.5 months, we don't know what grant they're going to give us.
Because this sounds to me like what was being sought as part of this new scheme, penalty-free downsizing. But that wasn't approved. But you still believe that you can apply for a grant to replace the bigger house with a smaller house? Or are you unsure about that at this point?
Oh, no. What I believe is I breached the cap once my house went over 3,400 square feet. There is no opportunity for me to rebuild that. I'm working with my architect. He believes he can get a 2,100 square foot house passed.
Mm-hmm. So,
but I don't know what grant will come with that. I don't know.
Yeah, 165 weeks since you applied for stage one. It's 18 yeah. weeks now since you applied for stage two, and still you haven't a clue as to what's next for you, really.
Well, there's more than the 18 weeks. That 18 weeks includes my wife rings the council twice a week. It's never a 5-minute call. She's always on the phone for over half an hour to three quarters of an hour by the time she gets through to people. She's on first name basis with most of the guys in there. They say it's with the technical department. No date when it's going to complete. It seems if it takes 4.5 months to get this rubber stamp to go to the next stage, then how long is the whole process going to get? We're not sure how long that's going to take. Talking to other people who applied in the same time frame, they found out in January what their grant allocation would be. So effectively, they're 3.5 months further down the road than we are.
But you're in limbo, really, at this point.
In limbo. Yeah. In limbo,
purgatory,
like going,
whichever
limbo.
Purgatory, you might want to describe it as well.
Yeah, no word coming back when we're actually going to get this grant award. That is only the current obstacle. We have found obstacles the whole way through this process, all of which require further information, all of which require getting back to people, I's dotted and T's crossed. We honestly believe we've been on top of it. And I only feel for those that probably haven't. I call it the ducks in a row, that their life is going to be almost impossible. But even as we try to do everything by the book, I currently have paid out, I suppose, €3,500 to an architect. I don't get that money back until at some stage I get into my build and get a claim.
Now,
and I have more to... I have an invoice pending too, but €1,000 is not that easy to put your hands on these days.
No, it certainly is not. This house is unlivable at the moment. Chimney ready to fall off, plaster off, black mould inside, sick children as a result. You have to move out, I take it. And I think that date is looming, isn't it?
Yeah, that date is in the next 2 weeks. My children have already left the house. Both of them are university students. They came back to live with us. One of them developed a cough. There has been black mold in his room for almost a year and a half. We have tried our best to keep it back. We just took a decision that we have to move out, and we have a property now in Derry. We can't get anything in the locality, and he has moved into that. My daughter's a medical student. She's away from home most of the time, but when she comes back, she will be living in Derry as well. And I have shut down the sky, so I have no TV in 2 weeks' time, and I will be moving out too. I do have a problem where I'm going to put my dogs.
Yeah.
I have two little Jack Russells. I don't know where to house them.
You work in project management, so you know how this stuff works. And you obviously also know how the scheme is working in terms of engagement and information being sought, and that archaeological report being sought on a house that's 17 years old. I understand. I'm not saying it's the case, but I can understand how you might feel that the scheme feels like it's being designed to frustrate you in actually replacing this house.
That's exactly what it seems to me, Greg. You took the words out of my mouth. The more I look at this scheme, it seems like it's intentionally attempted to stifle people every way through the process. How I can be 3 years through a four-step application process is beyond me. I do understand that the stage one was mixed up with the transition from the 90-10 scheme to the new enhanced scheme to wherever this scheme is going next. But when you are only allowed to contact someone for an update status 2 days a week and are then put in a queue, that's not right. Nobody is answerable. The book stops nowhere. We've nowhere to ring to find out what the real answer is. When is the completion date? something without a completion date never ends.
Can I ask, if you don't mind, too, in terms of the accommodation grant, have you been okayed for that, even though you will be living in a different jurisdiction?
No, I haven't made an application for an accommodation grant. Mm. I am trying to use as much money as is in that $420,000, if that's what I get allocated, minus engineer fees, to rebuild my house. Yes. I will pay mortgage and rent up to that time. I haven't asked for an application grant because I see that as more paperwork and more stifling work. Luckily, I suppose, I can just about to afford to do that. With two children in college, that's not easy. Something has to give.
I mean, you're writing off some amount of positive equity, whatever comes of this, you know, in terms of our worth, as you know, we pay off home mortgage and whatever we have is what we're worth. I mean, if you are approved for a smaller house, which I didn't really realise the scheme allowed for, which is an education.
I think the downsizing was, if someone had a 2,000 square foot house which was fully covered, could they get the grant for a 2,000 square foot house, build a 1,500 square foot house and use that equity to try and finish
Understood.
It? I think that's what the downsizing clause was
Understood.
Relating
I get
to.
You. That makes sense.
I fall outside that. I believe today that anybody with a house over 2,000 square foot will fall into a shortfall, that the cap will not build a house bigger than 2,000 square foot. So you really have no choice unless you want to put your hand in your pocket. I did some stats on the numbers which were available to me on the web, on the council webpage, etc. 60% of houses in Donegal are over 2,000 square foot. So that's 60% of houses where people will have to put their hand in their own pocket to get a like-for-like house back. Some might be able to. I definitely couldn't. How that can be 100% redress for 100% of the population is beyond me. The stats just don't add up.
Yeah, but
maybe smaller houses.
Yeah, but if you point that out, you know, you're accused of being all manner of things, yet the statistics are there to show that for the majority of people, this isn't 100% redress. But as I say, you almost get metaphorically shot for saying so.
If people were truthful with themselves and really sat back and examined this and examined what has been spun, it is a lie. It is a big lie, in my opinion. I have great, great respect for the action groups and the people who brought me to Dublin twice and who have two schemes on the table. I don't believe they would be there if that work wasn't done. I have really great respect for these people.
They share your concerns as it relates to those.
I just believe they're being tossed aside now, though.
Okay, listen, Brian, it is just 11 o'clock, so I have to go. Thank you very much for your time.